Hello everyone and welcome to the 48th episode of the Connectivity Podcast. I'm Mattias Fridström and I've spent the last 25 years inside the connectivity community. In this pod, we invite guests to deep dive into one or many subjects to simply learn more about connectivity. And in this 48th episode, I'm extremely happy to continue to talk to David Tomlin from CityFibre. One of the things that we struggle with in Aurelion is, of course, you know, our network is also fiber-based, but it's fiber-based between the larger cities around Europe and US. But one of the problems we have is that from time to time, there's still excavators out there cutting our fibers, despite us telling everyone everywhere, you know, ask before you dig. There might be cables in the ground. Your network is far more widely spread than our network. How do you cope with this? You know, how do you make sure that everyone who wants to make a new bus stop or build a new house are aware of where your cables are?
So it's been an interest. That's been a big area of development over the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. There's in the UK, there's a permitting system. Mm-hmm. So when you're meant to be doing road work, street works, you are meant to put in a set of permits, and those permits are visible. Mm-hmm. There's a website API that you can observe what's meant to be happening. And when we apply our analytics against that website, we can see who's working and, quite frankly, where we're also working at any one time. In the most case, there will always be an exception that somebody's on a building site and the cable's in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, there are developments about sharing network information. There is, especially in locations where it may be substantially constrained. So we have access to BT's pole and duct network records. And you can see a point in time where, as an industry, securely sharing that information together about everyone's network will improve the performance of all parties. But then there's the flip side, which is how much data do we want to share about the networks? There are part of the networks which are meant to be secure. They're meant to be not shared. They're there for government services often. And so we need to really understand the cost benefit of how much we do share versus how much we retain as privileged information. Mm. So it's a two-way street. Mm. Leverage the data where we're publishing, where everyone is working as an industry together, and also share the appropriate level of data of where your networks are.
Yeah.
But I fully appreciate the high level of hits that you get on long distance networks. I would also say we're in this period of time where everyone's digging up streets.
Yep.
As you roll out electric cars, there is lots of conversations about us as a fiber provider working with the EV charging companies to share trenches. The benefit of that is two-way. If we share the trench, we're sharing the cost of the dig. But also, if we're sharing the trench, we're only doing it once.
Yep.
So if we can get better as industries, be it EV charging, gas, electrics, fiber companies, to work together to build at the same time, then we still have these opportunities to reduce a large number of the cuts that occur both in the urban and in the long distance networks.
Yeah. One of the things that we also have is sort of a lot of customers of us are asking for transparency on where we actually run their traffic because they sometimes buy from more than one provider. Is that the same in your area, that some of your customers are actually asking where the fibers are going, or do you just tell them, you know, it's going to go from A to B and you could care less about where it goes, it's just going to arrive? Or is that an issue in fiber networks in cities?
In the residential market, Not really. The business enterprise market, it occurs occasionally. And it occurs where you've got a enterprise business which requires 24/7 365 operation. And by doing so, they may buy off two providers. They might buy off City Fiber, and they might buy off BT or Colt or Zayo, other providers in the United Kingdom. Now, we try and follow a good practice, which is we will work with the customer and often with the other fiber provider to ensure diversity if that's a key part of their requirements, if they can tell us early enough.
Okay.
And it's got to be, it's often got to be bespoke, because a lot of the networks share capacity, share routes, share ducts, as we spoke about. Where we see it evolving in the medium size enterprise and small enterprise market, and possibly even the home user market, is actually, it will be about, do you have one fiber-based broadband service to your home, or two over two different providers? Because the competitive market in the UK means that in many locations there could be two providers. And do you then have mobile as backup? And the likelihood of having a major outage that takes out all three of those options will become less and less over time as we build more resilience into the network architectures. So I actually see the market changing to be more aware of multi-network resilience by assumption, including the mobile operator backup, rather than being bespoke design by design type approach.
Okay, that's interesting. You mentioned mobile here, and I guess I need to ask the question, even though you're called City Fiber. Have you ever thought about any type of wireless solution as a complementary solution to your fibers, or will you always say, you know, that's someone else to do that?
We look at it regularly. We look at it because we actually do use some instances for our own diverse control and management network to ensure that we can operate the sites in some locations under the failure of the fiber networks. Absolutely appropriate to do so. As a service, however, we get challenged with our underlying mission. Our mission is to build an infrastructure for the future, 5, 10, 20 years. I mean, I really do think in 20-year terms. And every time we talk about fixed wireless style solutions, they have a much shorter life cycle. And for us, that's not really building the infrastructure that the country needs. If it changes, if that market changes, if the FWA solutions start to have longer life cycles for the products which are 1 gig and above, generally that we try and focus on, then we'll definitely evolve that conversation, that architectural strategy. But it really is against our underlying mission about changing the UK infrastructure.
Okay, but that makes sense. Perfect sense. You also mentioned that in some cases you will have both one or two, or even sometimes three fiber providers. Is the competition and the competitive environment on fiber in UK good enough? Too high? Too low? Or what do you think? I guess everyone wants to be alone on their market, but what would you say in terms of competition on the UK market? Because I know I can reference to the Swedish market where for a while there were. Everyone wanted to build a fiber network.
Yes. And we've gone through a period where nobody wanted to be in the fiber market for residential fiber. City Fiber and a couple other companies saw that as a competitive gap in the market and therefore pushed aggressively in the space. Then you see everyone being enthused by the opportunities of fiber and coming into the market. And then that will rationalize out over the coming decade. What I think we like is competition keeps us sharp. we are a competitive company.
Mm.
We don't want to be complacent. We see what complacency leads to in regards large organizations that sit on their monopolies. And this is going back through my career. I've always worked in the challengers.
Mm.
And you see it in other industries as well, not just telecoms. So our culture is one to challenge, mm. to challenge the status quo, to think about doing things differently, to build the infrastructure for the future, and not be constrained by the past. That unlimited access edge that we want to build is part of our mission. Now, to keep us focused, competition is good.
Okay.
If someone does it better, I should learn from that, and I should get better by doing so. And I think as a company, we have embraced that. It's always been part of our culture.
Mm. Oh, but that's good. That's really cool. One of the other things you said in the beginning here was that CityFibre is an open access company, which means that you're practically neutral to whoever buy your services. Have you ever thought about becoming an ISP yourself as well, and then kind of using your own fibers and selling services on top of it? Or do you feel that's for someone else to do?
We have always considered ourselves wholesaler. And the reason for that is channel conflict,
yeah.
Which is we want to focus on giving the best wholesale service possible. And if we dilute our focus by wanting to be an ISP as well, we just believe the conflict with our existing customers,
yeah,
won't mean that we will be able to develop really strong partnerships, and the different focus will confuse us. And inherently, they are different businesses. The wholesaler, we're building this infrastructure. It's a long-term focus on large capital deployments, long-term returns on investment.
Yeah.
Whereas an ISP needs to be far, far more agile in developing market propositions, possibly service developments, in-home developments.
Yep.
It's a completely different experience. Now, we need to be aware of the market.
Mm.
We need to learn from our partners, our ISP partners, who shape that market with their customers, so that we can always tailor our solutions to meet the evolving needs. But that is absolutely a wholesaler level. Being yeah. an ISP is really not a focus for us as yeah. a business.
All right. Oh, that's good. Are there times when you have to say no? I guess a small remote village might come to you and say, you know, hey, we would like to have fibers to every home in our village. And you will see that, ooh, that's going to be expensive. We can't afford that. Are those cases coming up, or are you always saying yes to everyone and you will build fibers for everyone?
We have to focus on what is effective infrastructure for the long term. So that means absolutely there'll be some cases where it's just not an appropriate route. Now, what has changed
mm-hmm.
is working with government.
Okay.
So working with government, we can absolutely be part of that investigation about how we reach these locations. It may not be now, it may not be 5 years' time, but how do we evolve the infrastructure to get to them eventually?
Mm.
And that can only be done for those really remote locations with government. And that's where you get teased into these conversations about, do you do fixed wireless access, which can be really appropriate for these locations.
Yep.
So working with service providers who are actually more focused on evolving that fixed wireless solution from a hamlet to the farm in those rural locations is a classic use case for us.
Mm.
So it's a work with industry approach that we try and follow to reach everyone.
Yeah. All right. On a completely other topic here, we struggle sometimes in our industry to find skilled people. It feels sometimes that they go to other type of industries where it feels cooler to work. I guess, are you in the same boat there? Do you easily find skilled people to work for CityFibre? Or is that a challenge? And are you a growing male population in the fiber work like we are in many other places in this industry?
It's a really interesting one because it's I remember when we started back in the 90s and it was cool. Everyone wanted to be a network engineer working on the internet. And now you want to work for software development companies building apps which are going to change the world. It's definitely been a challenge. One area I would say we've actually made good progress is on the construction side. There's been a lot of effort on the construction side to diversify the workforce, bring people in from other industries. I think COVID actually was an enabler of that, as things like the hospitality industry came under intense pressure. Then people saw the opportunity of working in fiber construction, and we definitely changed some of our dynamics then. And that makes the workplace so much richer. The conversation is so much more powerful. I'll say inclusive because it's true. It just changed the game on the construction side. On the network engineering side, we definitely struggle. We have put some effort into trying to support interns. We are starting to see more females, more cultural diversity coming through on some of the science subjects and mathematics. We're also having to tailor some of the roles as they evolve. So the network engineer of old really shouldn't exist anymore. Working on a command line interface into a proprietary implementation of a particular piece of equipment is a dying art. And actually, we are starting to get a lot more interest from a wider workforce around building automation, intelligence and insights on the network architecture. So I would say even 2 years ago, it wasn't as positive as that. But now we're really starting to see that come through. We just need to keep up the focus. We need to build up the example cases. They are really interesting. If you're analytical, if you're focused on outcomes as an individual, this is a sector that can have real potential for you. Especially considering there's going to be lots of gaps when we all retire in a few years' time. Yeah, it is. There is definitely a generational gap issue that we have to address as an industry.
That's interesting. But it's good that we see some positive signs there. And I would say we see that on our side as well, which is good, but it's far from very positive. So still some work to do. Another area, of course, that everyone talks about these days is sustainability and the pressure on every company in the world to become more sustainable. Has that sort of poured over to your side as well? Are you asked by your owners to be more sustainable, and are there ways of becoming more sustainable?
100%. It's not a box ticking exercise. It is an intrinsic part of how a company now does business. You see it when you're raising debt. For example, there are finance positions where you can get improvements in your interest rate if you are hitting certain metrics. So there are real world examples that mean there's an incentive to do it, like a direct financial incentive to do it, as well as industry good practice, social governance, because you know what, being environmentally aware as a business does actually make you more attractive to new recruits. And I think we all have learned that this can't be solved alone. It has to be solved together across all industries, across all societies. Now we see the impacts of not doing anything in the last 20, 30 years because we see it in the impacts of the weather conditions on our assets. Intense rainfall. We have our own data centers. The guttering is, I mean, literally basic things like this. The guttering is sized for a certain amount of rainfall. But now you get such torrential downpours that can overload the guttering. You get flooding events and you have to protect your assets. So we see these impacts of climate change. And so we've got to be partly responsible for trying to solve that in the longer term. Now, does that actually lead to tangible change? And for us, it has. We have brought forward a substantial capital investment to change from GPON to XGS-PON. And we did it not because the usage per customer says that you should do it. There's plenty of capacity in the old platforms. However, when we look at the new customers we're coming on board, because we're building a network, you get new customers come on board. It's not a mature network that you're just operating. So we get a fast uptake of customers, but we're also building quickly. And when we look at the manufacturing life cycle, when we look at the components we're building, when we look at the power usage, and we look at that over a 3, 5, and 10 year period, it was absolutely essential that we pushed for that migration from GPON to XGS-PON as quickly as possible. So our total footprint, power, waste of components, and including down to things like mining and the acquisition and building of the components in the first place, when we looked at the whole, it was substantially better by going faster. And hence why, with the investor's commitment, we're moving forward with that at quite an aggressive rate.
That's really cool. That's impressive. Very, very good. All right. I guess we're coming to the close of the sort of final piece of this. I could go on forever because this is super interesting. There's so many things I want to learn more. But sort of the last question then, if you and I would have this podcast discussion in 5 years' time, would we still talk about fibers or would we talk about satellites or hopefully not? But what would you think, you know, what would have changed and what would still be the same in 5 years?
I think fiber will become ubiquitous. It will be the normal technology. We would not be talking about it. I think what we would be talking about is the change in the in-home experience, the balance between privacy of your broadband service and the power that the data being more available to your broad range of home suppliers, be they your security system, your healthcare system, your social support, local government agency, all those things will tie together into a mesh of data, intelligence, privacy, and security. And actually, I think where we'll be talking about then is not about the infrastructure. It will be about those fundamental societal changes. What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? That is inherently is empowered through the fact that now the access edge, the fiber and based networks are unconstrained.
Okay. But that's super. That's really, really interesting. And I guess your fiber development will keep going. And by that time, maybe everyone in UK will have a fiber connection in some shape or form.
One would hope so. Yes, yeah. I'm still waiting for mine.
All right. Okay. No, this has been fantastic, David. Thank you so much for being a guest in this podcast. And thanks for all the fantastic insights into this. So thanks a lot for being here.
Matthew, thank you very much for inviting me. And I hope to speak to you soon.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks everyone for listening. We will soon be back with a new guest, so please follow us on X Connectivity Pod for updates. Stay tuned until next time.